You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Ellen O'Neill on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Sita had a fantastic opportunity this weekend to attend the Women of Courage Awards up in Washington, D.C. So Allie and I, Allie Tambor and I, are running the show today.
Scary.
I know it is. I feel a little unsupervised, but we're going to make it. I know it. Danny's here to help us out. So it is going to be a great show today. Normally we have two guests, you know, two separate segments on, but we got lucky enough to get Brevard Prevention Coalition here for the entire show today. So this is going to be a great, great hour of fantastic information about Brevard County. Of course, we're heard on 1510 WWBC, 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We're heard all over Brevard County, Southern Volusia County, Northern Indian River County, and of course, all of our friends kind of on the east side of Orlando can get our show as well. We're 50,000 watt station here in Brevard. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we've been on the air for 15 years, hard to believe. We've had the same segment spot of Monday afternoons at 1 p.m., and we're just blessed to be able to share community radio with you here. Of course, you can listen live. All you have to do is go to 1510wwbc.com, can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, all the archives of our shows are there. And then we share them on our social media as well as our website, which is cetamediainc.com. Boy, that's a lot to say. I'm used to Sita doing part of that, right?
Yes, yes.
So I know. That. Where's my buddy? I need my buddy today. Well, I do have my two buddies with me today. I do. Stanley Briz is the Briz. I did say it right. Yeah. He is the executive director and also an addictions and substance abuse misuse counselor for Brevard Prevention Coalition and a great friend of the show. Been on quite a few times.
Glad to be here again.
Yes, and we can't wait to hear all about all the new changes and things that are going on. And then, of course, we have Terrell Melvin. She is the program manager of the Brevard Prevention Coalition. And founder of some great programs that we're going to hear about today.
Yes, yes.
It's so great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's so great to have you. So just to kind of give us a little housekeeping so people that are listening out there, you can find Brevard Prevention Coalition. The website is brevardprevention.org. So if you'd like to kind of read along, if you will, if you're listening live, you'd be able to check that website out and see all the things. But we'll make sure that everybody gets all the information as we share it throughout the day. So, Stanley, I'll start with you. Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. I know. Yay.
Glad to be here. Yay.
Yay. So tell us a little bit about the history of Brevard Prevention Coalition and sort of your background, how you got involved.
Great. Well, yeah, I was working for another organization doing prevention services. We also did housing and mentoring programs for incarcerated youth, a whole bunch of things that I oversaw in multiple counties, actually. And I was added as a member of the coalition when it was just really a committee. And that was pre-2017, so like 2007, 2017. And just from seeing the need and more interest just coming up from the coalition within, we started it to be a 501c3 nonprofit, and that happened officially in 2018. So I'm happy to say that I kept going with that and really left my other position and focused on it full time.
That's right. And you have family reasons too why you always were involved in this type of work. So It's so fantastic that once again someone uses their passion and their love and their love for the community to make changes in Brevard, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's interesting when it comes into your personal life, it really, really awakens you to other things and you want to help even more. I always say, you know, we don't believe that we are going to, you know, save the world and end, wipe out, you know, addiction on our own forever. I really always save that to God as a higher power. But it doesn't mean you can't help people right now in their current time of need.
That's right. That's our purpose here, right? Is to help each other out. And Terrell Melvin.
Yes.
Such a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for being on the show with us today. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with Brevard Prevention.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm originally from Broward County, Florida. I lived in a few cities down there, so I just say Broward County. So then I went to Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, and my background is in psychology and community psychology. So when I started actually working, I was in substance misuse prevention from day one, working with youth, working in the community, just trying to prevent youth from turning to substances. Before I got involved with Stanley in the coalition, I was working for another organization as well, which I was doing similar things. I was working at the South Alternative Learning Center and doing a lot of prevention plans with youth who may have already, you know, went into substances. So just trying to stop them from doing that. And then I was blessed with the opportunity to come on as a program manager and lead a team of, at the time, I think it was three, to do, we grow and then we shrinken. Yeah, so lead a team, I'll just say that.
You got voluntold.
Yeah. came on and we just kind of started working in community centers and schools and stuff like that, working with the youth of all ages and even families, just educating them about different substances that are in the world, and also just trying to, you know, help youth figure themselves out but make positive choices in the, you know, process of finding out who they are themselves.
So, and it's all in the name, right? It's all about prevention. So how early do you get started in the community? What's the age range that you get started in the community to try and really enforce that prevention piece? Because, you know, I mean, with everything, you know, with poverty, with homelessness, sometimes that's generational, right?
Yes.
So especially with addiction and abuse in general, just abuse of anything in general, people or substances, it seems like it's a generational type of thing. So how early do you get started with these conversations in our community?
We start early. So I would say as young as 5 years old, parents need to be mindful of their. That doesn't mean that at 5 years old you're going to have a conversation with your kid about fentanyl per se.
Right.
But that's where
age specific.
Yeah,
training.
Age,
right?
Yeah, age appropriate. That's when you start with helping them, obviously, with refusal skills, but also how to cope. Mm-hmm. We learn that when trauma comes up in anyone's life or any kind of difficulty or adversity, how do they cope with that? But also how to respond to peer pressure. It starts really early. The thing about prevention is you can't always point back to someone who doesn't misuse drugs and say, well, that's what worked with them. You don't really know, but you got to do it, right? That's how you see on the back end the successful numbers in that regard. So all the way up until the adult, I mean, I just got an email from another resource about training and information related to seniors, that the numbers of seniors that are overdosing or being poisoned has really jumped. Some of them are on medications and either get addicted to the medications or don't remember how much they took. They, you know, may have had a surgery or some other medical condition that required an opioid. Sometimes the opioids are the only thing you can get for, you know, back issues, knee surgeries, etc. And so there's a lot of education for the entire family. And then when you educate family members that also may have addiction history and maybe they're in recovery now, they still have kids, you know, that are going to school that are elementary age or middle school age. So it's really a full circle wraparound approach. If you help the parents, they'll be more stable to help their kids and so on.
Yeah. And I think about things like even when kids are studying in school, right? And then it was like, oh, take Ativan or take, you know, take this stuff and it makes you stay up later. Even, you know, our addiction was Jolt Cola to stay up, right?
Yeah.
That was it. Like when we were in school, that was our big thing, was to stay up and study. But But even the pressure of success, you know, you think about it, it's not somebody that you're looking at it's on the side of the streets or, you know, in a homeless situation. I mean, it affects every age range, every socioeconomical area, right? The area.
And something you said, even Stanley, about the seniors, a lot of times when we're doing community outreach in these communities, or even at events, trying to give Narcan out or resources out, and the big thing that they say is, I don't do that. I don't hang around people that do that. And I always try to give them an example of two examples. One, I don't do any hard drugs, right? But I keep Narcan in my car because I was in Titusville getting my hair done, and it was a man outside that was unresponsive. And thankfully, I had Narcan in my car, and I was able to give it to him. And a few days later, I got a text message saying that he was okay. Or it may be a senior who takes medication for some reason, but they forgot they took a pill and takes too much. Thankfully, somebody has Narcan on them, and that they can revive them or, you know, give them a dose of Narcan and save their life. So it doesn't have, like, you don't have to be using drugs yourself or associating with people that use drugs or hard drugs or whatever, but you can, you know, have these things on you and save someone else's life, you know?
Yeah, it's not specific to neighborhoods anymore, right? Or to areas. It could be anywhere and anything. And I believe, you know, there was a lot of organizations, but I believe Brevard Prevention Coalition was big in making sure that the Narcan word was out there. Because it seems like now we can actually have these open conversations now about Narcan. And there's so many people now because they were giving it away for free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so that everybody had the opportunity to participate, if you will, you know, in making sure that their community was safe.
Definitely prepare.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. And I want to speak to that, too. We'll be talking a little bit later, I think, about harm reduction and stigma reduction. But that will be what kills many people beyond overdose itself. The fear of talking about it in your families and in your communities, the avoidance people have of being stigmatized as, oh, there's drugs in that family. And I mean, it doesn't matter which neighborhood you live in, whether it's a wealthy area or not so wealthy neighborhood, etc. These stigmas exist in culture. And so a big thing that we do as Brevard Prevention Coalition is we provide education to the community, be it professionals in the community, be it residents in the communities where we can in an age-appropriate way at schools and community centers, just so people know it's okay. It's very similar to learning CPR, to knowing how to use a defibrillator,
right?
To being able to save someone. It doesn't mean that you have any of those issues or problems yourself or expect them, but to be someone that can help. Narcan is the brand name. The product is actually Naloxone. There's several brands of Naloxone. You can also get it at the pharmacy as well. We're trying to work on, we do have it for free through our organization if people would like Narcan, even for their businesses. At the pharmacies, you have to pay, and I don't always think the purchase is covered by insurance. It's a little, you know, it's tricky when you get involved in insurance.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's not stigmatized any longer or it's less stigmatized is so refreshing because for so long, people would be, well, if we talk about it, that means our city or our community has a problem with this, and it makes people think, you know, negatively of us. And because of that, we've always been chasing this problem and from behind instead of getting ahead of it.
So let's talk about the community a little bit and this community that supports you, right? So you've mentioned that you're in schools and community centers. What's your typical week like for the community? Like where different places are you able to?
Yeah, so I can kind of speak on my staff. They're amazing, by the way. Latoya, Aaron, and Leticia, shout out. They're amazing. They're so dedicated to what they do. But a week will look like most of my staff right now are in community centers. So I'll start with Palm Bay. So we're in two community centers in Palm Bay, Ted Whitlock and Tony Rosa. Then we are in Melbourne as well. So then we're at the dock. We're at Carver Park, and sometimes we do Melbourne Library. Then to Coco, we do, I can't think of the name. Jolie Smith Community Center. We're also at Emma Jewell Charter School, and we work with churches as well. So the Real Church, we do some monthly things there. And then we ended in Titusville for now. So we're at the YMCA in Titusville in Boys and Girls Club. And then we're also going to start services in Seminole County. But throughout the week, my staff go to each location once a week, and they do like an hour programming with youth, where that may look like talking about refusal skills, coping skills, or we may bring in a vendor, a professional vendor, to teach them different skills, or introduce them to different things, because we have learned that exposure is everything. You can change a total outcome of a youth life by introducing them or exposing them to things. So every week we come in with a lesson plan or a workshop with the youth. And yeah, that's pretty much how a week looks for a staff that works at Brevard Prevention Coalition. Yeah.
And we're getting more locations like weekly, it seems like, reaching out to us.
Yeah.
City of Melbourne sat down and had a meeting with us about expanding to more locations there. Brevard County Jail reached out about addiction information, you know, for some of the inmates there. So
And even after school programs with Brevard public schools, we're going to have meetings with them to see if we can go to some of their after school programs to talk to some of their kids there.
Well, yeah. And I remember the prevention piece in New Jersey. My sister was their bullet point was truancy. Mm-hmm. So when kids were skipping school, those were the kids that were at risk. That was what a considerable. So even taking those little pieces of, wow, this statistic is different. Like you had said about the seniors, I would have never thought about seniors having an overdose issue, right?
Yeah.
And because of those things. But truancy seemed to be one of those things that was like a kind of a buzz thing that now the kids are not coming to school. Maybe we need to check in.
And we have the diversion program too that we oversee. Brevard Public Schools contracted with us to provide that. Well, we created it and are now providing it for our second school year. We're almost done with it.
Yeah.
And so any youths that are caught with specifically vaping or vaping THC, I know the first year was on any substance, but vaping THC seems to be the like 99% issue.
And now it's available in gas stations.
It's available everywhere.
Like crazy.
And any time, if it's their first time, they can opt to come to our diversion program, which means they can stay in their home school, whereas previously they were sent to an alternative learning center, taken out of their normal school, for lack of a better term. They can stay there. They'd still have to, refrain. They don't do, like, special things. They're on a student stipulation conduct agreement, so they can't do special clubs and things, but at least they're in their school. And then they meet with us for group sessions after hours once a week. It's 8 weeks long. Their parents are also involved in those sessions in the beginning and end anyway. And that way they're able to kind of process in a group setting with a facilitator that's experienced with, you know, how substance use entered their lives. In the beginning, the kids are like, I don't want to be here. But by the end of it, they're like, can I come back? You know,
they feel safe because you make them feel safe. And having those open conversations is real important. So those of you listening in, we're here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with Stanley and with Terrell from Brevard Prevention Coalition. Check out their website, brevardprevention.org. That's here in Brevard County. And lots of great resources on the website, by the way. Downloadable items like yellow card prevention resources and fentanyl awareness campaign efforts and so forth. So make sure
How to Talk to Your Kids
is on here. Absolutely. Throw out your leftovers.
So meaning your leftover prescriptions. I know, it's a double entendre there. And what is it? It's a catchy flyer name.
It's an excellent idea. So what are the issues that are most pressing when it comes to substance abuse or misuse in the community?
So right now I would say the fentanyl awareness. If you're getting any drug from anybody illicitly, it's more than likely going to have fentanyl in it. I've seen that. Even marijuana. If you're not getting marijuana from a dispensary, because people have, once again, I don't want to debate that topic. If people feel that's what they need to do and they get a medical marijuana card, that's a different topic for a different day. But if you're getting it illicitly, you cannot trust that fentanyl is not in it. We've had several people, I also do addiction counseling, as you mentioned, come back and they're like, why is fentanyl in my, you know, urine drug screen? You know, I don't do fentanyl. All I did was, you know, smoke weed. And my first question is, well, did you get it from a dispensary or did you get it from, you know, so-and-so next door or whatever, and it's usually, oh, I got it from this person. I'm like, well, it's contaminated, either deliberately contaminated or, you know, when they're doing drugs on, you know, or rolling the papers or preparing the drugs they want to sell, they're doing it on a contaminated surface. They're maybe dealing multiple drugs. And we've seen people poisoned by fentanyl who intended to get something else. And so sometimes that's deliberate. They think they're going to get an oxy or they think they're going to get a molly, you know. And it's really just a pill pressed to look like one thing, but it's actually fentanyl. So that is rampant
right now.
So is the
fentanyl, is that the addictive property that keeps people coming back?
So fentanyl is an opioid. There's medical grade fentanyl, which many people get legitimately in the hospital if you're getting a certain procedure done. Sometimes even if they're doing a procedure where they're just scoping and they still have to maybe go through a vein or like mm-hmm. a vein cath, I forgot what you call it, cardiac cath procedure sometimes. If they feel you need to calm down, they'll give you a small amount of that to kind of level you out, not to get you high per se. Illicit fentanyl now is being made from, you know, material. You know, people can order things off the internet, get it from drug dealers. And it's just a potent opioid or synthetic opioid product that can really, I think it's right, 100 times more powerful than heroin.
Wow.
50 times more than morphine. I might have reversed those two numbers, but it's that much more powerful than morphine and heroin. And so it's cheap. So someone looking for an actual oxycodone or hydrocodone or, you know, the things that kind of kicked off the opioid crisis, since those are so rare and really, really hard to get, thanks to certain laws that have been put in place, and doctors being monitored now on how they prescribe. Well, you know, they've switched now to something that's easier and cheaper than heroin, but more potent. And
I remember it wasn't that long ago. I believe there was a sort of a weekend epidemic, if you will, and I believe that like 16 or 17 people died mm-hmm. in Cape Canaveral. And it was over a weekend of a supplier that had supplied people with. And I remember it hitting the news. It was a little delayed in hitting the news, so yeah. We didn't find out about it until afterward, probably because of the investigation. But that was my awareness of fentanyl, that I was like, wow, this is, you know, they're putting it in everything. And yeah. it's almost to make you addicted, right? That's the idea, is to try and get you keep coming back.
And it doesn't take much at all for someone to be deadly. I always tell when I'm talking to youth about it or just educating people on it, if you look at a tip of a pencil, that's all you need for it to be deadly to someone. So it's not, you don't need like a big bunch of it at all.
Tip of a sharpened pencil, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, a tip of it.
And I did correct. So it's 50 times more potent than heroin and 100 times more potent than morphine. So it just takes a little bit. And most drugs today are contaminated with fentanyl.
Yeah.
I have not seen a positive urine drug screen at the clinic where I provide counseling services. I haven't seen one positive for heroin in a long time. Long time, maybe 4 years. I'm not speaking for other counselors out there, but very rare to see actual heroin. So when they think they're getting heroin, it's usually fentanyl. It's unfortunate. And the addiction is such a beast that if someone overdoses or is poisoned and dies from fentanyl, people that are deep into their addiction might seek out that dealer. They don't think they're going to die. They just think, oh, that's the strong stuff. That's what I really need. Because deep in addiction, you're not just trying to get high. You're just trying to stay well. You're trying not to detox. Right. A lot of them need
so
it to function.
That's a lot. So what's the strategy? You know, obviously education on that side of it. Counseling is the other part of it. But what are some of the other strategies that you're doing in the community to help get ahead of that if you can? Yeah. I mean, is there a possibility we can get ahead of it?
So we're boots on the ground. I can
Amen.
Say that. we go knock on doors. We go in these underserved communities, and we're talking to these people. We're hearing their stories as well because, you know, a lot of times I go into rooms just as a woman of color, a black woman. I go into these professional rooms, and it's no one in there that looks like me. And the education is being given and the PowerPoints and the professionals are talking, but I'm like, who is this information for? Who is it going back to? Like, are we touching the people that need this information? So going in these communities, talking to anyone that will listen and tell them what fentanyl is, resources that's out there as far as Narcan or even the yellow cards that we have. Like if you know someone that wants help or they're ready to stop using drugs, these are some resources you can reach out to. So we are big on like just word of mouth as well. I know we also do some other things like campaigns and stuff that Stanley can speak on. But boots on the ground is a major way that we reach the community.
Do you mean like one-on-one with people? You're walking and talking?
Yes.
And you say boots on the ground?
Yes. Yeah, and going and knock on doors. Even some people invite us into their front room and we'll talk to them. Some of the people that, you know, an average professional may not want to speak to at a corner store, we go up. Sometimes they're actually rolling marijuana themselves when we're speaking to them, but those are the people that we need to talk to that's at higher risk of, you know, coming across fentanyl and other drugs.
Are they looking for something stronger? Is that what, when they, I mean, you know, other than rolling a pot cigarette? I sound like an old lady.
A little bit, but it's okay.
We got you. You know, not everyone who, you know, smokes marijuana or vapes it or consumes it in any other way, even though edibles, is looking to use something stronger. So I don't want to put that out there.
No.
But people are trying to escape pain.
Yeah.
In various forms, be it physical pain, emotional pain. And the potency of marijuana these days is not what it was in 19-whatever, even in the early 2000s. It's gotten much more potent. People have learned through the internet, you know, how to grow it and how to get it just, you know, as strong as they want it. And then adding fentanyl to that at times to even give it more of a kick. And so progressively, because we're running into that escapism that people are really trying to, people are really trying to get away from whatever their inner turmoil is and exterior problems that they don't want to deal with, it's getting worse and worse. So in certain situations, they do look for something stronger.
Yeah. And even speaking to our youth about it, it's always we try to do the population. We try to center what we're doing with them around of like who we're dealing with. Some youth, we can sit down and do a presentation for them and educate them on what's going on and stuff like that in the community, and they'll listen, they'll take it, and then it's some youth that we have to be real with. We have to tell them stories, and we have to like show them or tell them that the experimental stage is not there anymore. Like, you know, back in the day, you can try something and wake up the next day and decide like, hey, I don't want to do that anymore. But now, like, you can try something for the first time and you can die. Like, you won't wake up the next morning.
And I want to reinforce, too, that it's every community. It's the zip code is not affected in this particular prevention coalition piece, right? Every single person from the CEO of companies to the person who's homeless, possibly,
absolutely.
Right? The degree is really based on how much money they have.
True.
Because you just buy more if you have more money, right? Yeah. And maybe you barter a little bit more if you don't have money. But it is not a zip code problem, really. It's every issue. So it's great that that you're able to have those kind of different presentations where you're, you know, at an executive level where you're able to talk to people, and maybe when you go into a room and other people don't look like you, they still have the same psychology of, wow, this is affecting me, this is affecting my family in different ways. And the real stories really just kind of put the youth at sort of a comfort level, if you will, that, wow, they really do know their stuff, you know. And hopefully that scared straight thing, if you remember, right, back in the, that was in the 70s, that was the big drug prevention back then,
work with
right,
everybody.
Was we take people to jail. Well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people that are using drugs and are addicted are not going to jail.
Yeah.
No.
Because they have the lawyers to get them out of it.
No.
Yeah.
Right?
And we're not criminalizing addiction either. We want to criminalize
right.
the
exactly.
dealers,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Right. And that's
do you
a great point.
Talk about
that's
Do It For Pee?
Is that
the next? We'll come back.
Yeah, we're going to come back right after these messages right here. We're going to have a really quick, brief talk to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Stanley and Terrell with Brevard Prevention Coalition.
Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, listeners, here at A Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on 1510 WWBC, 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are having a fantastic discussion with our friends Stanley and Terrell from Brevard Prevention Coalition. And I just wanted to, we had a great, robust first half of the show, but I wanted to talk about some key takeaways because they were sent from Sita. She's on a plane, like we talked about, right? She's on a plane, and she's sending me key takeaways that she wants to make sure that everybody knows about, which, again, were part of the first part of the show, but great facts. Fatal opioid overdoses among adolescents ages 12 to 17 have doubled since 2020. As a result, drug overdose, usually involving fentanyl, is now the third leading cause of death for children and adolescents. Hard to believe, but true. Teens are purchasing fentanyl at school, online, via social media, and through friend groups. So, wow, you have such a great, like a huge audience to hit, right? It's not just communities and being boots on the ground.
Yeah.
We got to hit every single thing, right?
Yeah.
And then finally, talking to your teen about drug abuse, misuse, and treatment could be life-saving. So these are, you know, Sita and I, when we started the show 15 years ago, we talked about always having kitchen table conversations, right? That was our famous thing back then. Still is today. People sitting down around the table and having these discussions because you never know who you're going to reach. It's not just maybe your children, but it could be your neighbor's children. It could be your friends, your coworkers, your boss, your CEO, right? So all of those things. And we've had the Boys and Girls Clubs on from Brevard County and from Orange County here on the show. And I saw that you have an event that you do, an ICM weekly program at the Boys and Girls Clubs. And this one particularly is in Titusville, which is, again, a free program. They're perfect for elementary-aged youth and focus on self-care, positive choices, and team building. And they'll enjoy things like creative arts and painting and team bonding and those types of things, sports and movement. That, again, a lot of latchkey kids, what we used to call latchkey kids because both parents were working, a lot don't have that direction. So, you know, kudos to the Brevard Prevention Coalition and to the Boys and Girls Club for bringing it to this community and our communities in such a great way, you know, where the children can bond together and really kind of go through these discussions together and have these discussions together, which is fantastic, fantastic. So with that being said, there's a lot of great initiatives that Brevard Coalition does. And each time that you're on Stanley, it always amazes me of the events that you're going to, the, you know, huge park deals where everybody kind of lines up and gets information out to the community. Terrell, tell us a little bit about, I know about the Move Into Light initiative. That was one of the things that I was reading on the website as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and what does that mean for our community?
Yeah, so our Move Into Light initiative, it focuses on anti-stigma, also addiction education, overdose prevention, suicide prevention as well, all types of things. But that's when we are basically telling people to come into the light. You are not alone. Your family's not alone. Also touching the recovery community, people that, you know, survived addiction. So just providing a space for, it's actually generational because we have young kids that are dealing with addiction as well, where they have a space to, one, be educated and also tell their story.
Yeah, you don't think about the brothers and sisters of the people that are having addiction, right?
Yes.
And the young people, or even the older siblings that are looking at seeing their siblings affected by it one way or another, right?
Absolutely. It's generational. It's also intergenerational. It's intra-generational, whatever term. You have to serve the entire family. So you're not always looking at the person that you say is the impacted or the affected individual directly. You want to look at the ones that are indirectly impacted. And so the Move to Light initiative really does that. And to double back a little bit, the ICM, I Choose Me, is something where we focus on families and kids, maybe before drugs are even, you know, introduced to them, as that early intervention preventative message. Whereas our Move Into Light message is a little more, okay, you've been impacted. You don't know how to deal with it. Stigma is keeping you from talking to your best friend about it, or your sister or your aunt or uncle or mom or dad about it. So how can we have you, like Terrell said, step into the light? You're not alone. Shame doesn't need to hang around you, but also step into the light for those who might be opponents, like, oh, we don't want to talk about that, or those people, that's their problem, it's not ours.
Right. And that's an amazing way to put it as well. We want to make sure that the entire family is a part of it. Yeah. Because I even think about when you had said earlier about people not being able to cope, and that's a big way for people to kind of step into that lifestyle, if you will, because they can't cope and it doesn't feel good, so let me just run away from it all. And I think about young children that, you know, their lights get turned off, like the parents, like FPL, you know, knocking at their door type of thing, and all of a sudden the lights are out, and then the child thinks, wow, I need to jump in here and figure out how to help my family. Well, the easiest way for children to help sometimes is doing things that are not necessarily good for them, right? And doing things that they think are for the betterment of the family, and they don't realize that that's not the way to go, right? So it once again, I want to reiterate that it affects everybody and every zip code and every stature of life. It doesn't matter where you're at. So what are some of the other initiatives that you have going on that are I Choose Me is probably one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
You know, I look at that from a youth standpoint. But yeah. What are some other initiatives that you have going on?
So we actually, under the Move Into Light initiative, where we have a civic group that I started. It's called Do It for P. Do It for P, Do It for Me, I Am My Sister's Keeper. And what Do It for P, it was started in honor of my sister, Pilar Melvin. Last year on February 4th, she unfortunately passed away from fentanyl poisoning. And just putting a pause there, just explaining the difference between a poisoning and an overdose. An overdose is when you take too much of something, right? And, you know, you overdose and, you know, you may end up passing away. A poisoning is when someone goes for one thing, they go for one thing. So they're going for Oxy or a Percocet, which was my sister, which she went for a Percocet, and it was fentanyl. So they're unknowingly getting something that they weren't expecting. So I always just like to tell the difference between the two, because my sister went for a Percocet and she got fentanyl. It was no Percocet at all in that pill, and she passed away. If she got the Percocet that she had got before, she would have been here today to raise her two boys who are 16, turning 17 next month or in 2 months, and her six-year-old. But she's not here because somebody gave her fentanyl instead. So
and condolences from all of us.
Oh, no, no, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so turning my pain into passion and working with the community and educating them, because what I want to do is provide a space where I educate people in underserved communities about what fentanyl is, the resources out there. If you are going through stressful situations, whether it's grief, which I know my sister was dealing with, or whatever it may be, if you're dealing with it, it's different resources out here where you can talk to someone. It's support groups and things like that. If you're actively in substance use and you're ready to get out, these are some resources that you can use. But going in these communities that don't know about these resources and explaining to them, or telling them what's out here. And also breaking down that education in the way that they understand. Because like I said before, I'll go in these rooms and I'll hear it. And just because, you know, I have an educational background in addiction and therapy and all of that, those things, I understand it. But I'm thinking about family members that I may have that's out there that don't have the educational level that I have. And they may not be able to understand this information. Like, so how is it going to help them when they're like most vulnerable? So breaking down that information for these populations.
When I think about all the things that we've learned in communities from our friends,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I remember there was a lady on that we had one time. She was from the, she was deployed by the infectious disease, I believe, folks, to Philadelphia. And it was because so many girls were getting STDs, you know, sexually transmitted diseases and so forth, based on information that they were getting from their friends. You know, one of them, she said it was the craziest thing. One of these young girls, she was in sixth or seventh grade, asked if you could get pregnant from sitting on a concrete stoop. Mm. And, you know, when you think about that type of thing, and it wasn't that long ago, by the way.
Yeah.
So when you think about it that way, I can only imagine what the drug pushers, if you will, mm-hmm. like the drug dealers and so forth that are selling these things to people are telling these young people, or telling, you know, just like with your sister, unknowingly getting poisoned.
Yeah.
when you know, how do you know?
Yeah, and she actually got it from someone she knew. Like, she knew. It wasn't like somebody she didn't know, like a drug dealer that she randomly went to. So it's not whereas a situation where it's strangers providing these things for you. It can be like, you know, somebody that you speak to every day. You just never know. Putting that information out there and telling them, like, you have to be careful. And these are the facts. Yeah.
So is the education and the community outreach under these two names? So under the two, the missions that you have, under the Do It for P and under the Move Into Light,
so
are they specific?
So it's kind of, sometimes I love to explain it, it's kind of like an umbrella. So you have Brevard Prevention Coalition, which is the organization. Then you have the initiative, which is Move Into Light and the anti-stigma and the overdose prevention. And under Move Into Light, you have the civic group, which is Do It for P, because it follows everything that Move Into Light is doing in the community. So it's just a section of it where we do It for P, mm-hmm. and under my sister, and always also save lives and while we're doing it. Mm-hmm.
So, and we're talking a lot about drugs and things specifically, but, you know, other things come with that, right? The STDs, the sexually transmitted diseases. Mm-hmm. I know your background, you have some background in education for AIDS and HIV.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, yes.
Is that kind of partner? Is that kind of a, like an outreach on both sides here for that as well?
So I will tell you, so the purpose of Do It For P is to provide education, but also like stress reducing resources. So a lot of people can go to substance use for many reasons. It can be something like, oh, they may have AIDS, or they may be coping with some of the symptoms from having HIV and AIDS and turn into substance use. So what we will do is anything that is may lead them to substance use, we're trying to provide resources for it. So if it is mental health, as far as just mental health, you're not really using substance use, try to get them into counseling. If it's something where it's a physical thing, like their blood pressure or cancer or something like that, and they may be turned into substance use, let's try to get them some physical health resources, job, you know, maybe a situation where someone doesn't have a job and they have a family to take care of. So what are you going to do to deal with that stress? Might turn to drugs. So let's try to get them some job, career, education, job, just some resources to try to navigate, like, how to deal with that stress, and also maybe, you know, just deal with the stress altogether.
And it's really a way of thinking, too, that we're trying to address, because whether it's alcohol or drugs or other things, addiction itself is not necessarily specific to substances.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals who develop a mindset that leads to a substance use disorder, or that is an addicted mind, if you want to put that term out there, it could be anything. It could be the marijuana. It could be
sugar.
Sugar. It could be adrenaline.
There's a lot
of addictions out there.
Okay, that's me.
I have that too. And that's where the terminology, which is not so necessarily a clinical one, but, you know, you can transfer your addiction, doesn't really necessarily mean you're moving your addiction. It's that you have addiction, and whatever is going to soothe you in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that may stop using heroin or stop using opioids and then just dive more into their alcohol or drinking.
Well, and I think from you, I learned on some of the past interviews and things that we've had together, you don't even use the term gateway drug anymore. Like that there's not really a gateway anymore. It's coping. It really boils down to coping, right?
Yeah, and if people get triggered by that, you know, especially people who are like proponents of, you know, well, marijuana's fine, et cetera. What you're trying to do is not everyone who tries a drug or, you know, alcohol will become addicted to the substance,
mm-hmm.
right? That's not going to happen. But you don't know. There's many people who are just neurologically more inclined to develop an addiction. So anything can be a quote-unquote gateway, you know, to addiction. And so what I really like about Do It For P is that under that, you know, it's under our Move Into Light initiative, but that civic group that Terrell has started is educating people who normally don't hear that. It's getting into those spaces where people, and specifically those in underserved and under-resourced communities, mm-hmm. just think it's a problem that wealthy people have had. Like, oh, we don't have designer drugs laying around the house, or we don't have, you know, prescription meds, you know, just for any purpose. You know, we're maybe street drugs impact us more than other things. It's getting into those spaces and saying it's all connected,
mm-hmm.
and this is what you need to know and need to be aware of. Sometimes kids get it from drug dealers. Sometimes they get it from other kids. Sometimes they get it because they're coping with trauma and stress.
Their parents' medicine cabinet.
Or their parents' medicine cabinets or purses. We've had kids, you know, say, hey, why am I getting in trouble for vaping? My mom gives me hers to use.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, so I'm going through this program, but, you know, it's what's the big deal? Or marijuana, you know, my family smokes marijuana. It's not a big deal. So it's dealing with those perceptions and perception of risks or harm, and trying to debunk some of those myths associated with it. So some kids are just bored or peer pressure. All of those same reasons that we've heard of for years all work against them, and they're resisting utilizing drugs and alcohol. But now it's become so much harder to escape the pressure because of cell phones.
Music, entertainment,
it's
everywhere.
It's saturated. And now that it's become more acceptable to the generation that became adults in the early 2000s, they have kids now.
Mm-hmm.
And so their perception of the risk of harm of those things is reduced even more than a previous generation. And it's leading, unfortunately, to some really, really negative outcomes.
Yeah. Well, and when, you know, and not to downplay it, but when Snoop Dogg becomes like the face of things, mm-hmm. and we know what he stands for, and we know what his background is, and he's always been a proponent of the fact that that's what he does, you know, that he uses. So he makes it socially acceptable. And then when all that, so you've got a huge uphill battle when it comes to that, to have that conversation. And going back to what you said about, oh, my mom buys it for me. I mean, how do you cope with that? How do you tell a youngster that, like, I know your mom gives it to you, but it still doesn't make it right? You know, that's a huge battle. How do you do that?
Well, and do it for P. Like, one thing I liked about that, too, is getting them to understand the root causes. So these are maybe populations that don't always look at therapy as something that they should be interested in, or counseling, or diving deep like that. It's one of those, oh, just tough it out and just push through it.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Or you're soft, you're sensitive. Like, those are things that, you know, a lot of the populations that we deal with, they hear, and just letting them know, like, no, that's not okay. Like, it's okay to go and speak to someone. It's okay that someone goes to therapy. They're not crazy. Or you experienced something and that was traumatic, and it makes sense that you may, you know, be looking for an escape. But it is a healthier way to do it.
Uh-huh. And so, like, hosting these events, and she'll talk about the one that she has coming up, which we're really excited about,
yeah,
gives them an opportunity to come into that space. Sometimes you have to entice them with other things they may want to experience.
Yeah.
You know, food helps too. But just bringing them in to say, okay, now we're going to talk to you about, you know, why this is an issue, but also, like, something we do with our other initiative with I Choose Me is we still have that positive element in there. We deal with, you know, positive youth development a lot in the work that we do, and it's saying, okay, not so much, like we said earlier, the don't do, just say no doesn't always work, right? With a lot of kids, it doesn't work. But we get into the space where, okay, you want to be this. Now, how are you going to get there? Is this going to help you get to be at this level? If you want to be an influencer, which is now like one of the number one jobs that kids want to become,
right.
You know, if you really want to influence people and look your best on social media, or if you want to do something that will require a lot of attention and focus, and you want to have money to buy these things, we can see how those two are juxtaposed to each other. Like, they're not, that's not going to get you there. And sometimes that appeal to self-interest is what works. So whatever method works with anyone, you know, just trying to really see what the family needs. And if you meet that need, the hope is that they'll make the positive
and
better.
And what a team you have to be able to come up with all of these different approaches, mm-hmm. right? Which just means that you're really involved in the community and listening and hearing what people are saying and hearing what people are experiencing. Like, I wouldn't have thought number one job people want as an influencer, right? Because, where's the influencer class in high school? There isn't. You know, there isn't I've been saying for 10 years, we're not teaching in high school what people are going to want to be in 5 years, and even in 5 years. So here's another perfect example of, you know, me being uneducated to be able to go in and speak to that type of, to that generation of saying, wow, if this is what you want to be, then you have to kind of line these things up. We used to say, you want to be a lawyer, you got to do this, right? You want to be a doctor, you have to do this, because it was a mapped out process. Now there's these vague and general things that you just have to be a good you in order to be successful. So having that message and in five different ways or 50 different ways of being to say, be the best you and you'll get everything that you want in life, right? Mm-hmm. Every single thing that you want. Mm-hmm. And it involves, fortunately, education about how to cope and how to get through things and how to deal with, I mean, who was prepared to get our children through the pandemic?
No,
right?
One.
No one was. You know, as a matter of fact, I remember the memes all the time. Oh, in 4 years, we're going to see all of these kids that were educated by day drinkers. Because the parents were, right? The parents were sitting home going, oh my gosh, like, I've never done this math before.
Yeah.
I don't know how to educate these. I don't know how to help.
I'm
right?
sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that.
But it's the comedy side of it, but it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that whole pandemic thing, how was anybody prepared to cope for any of that? And we weren't. As a society, as a nation, as a community, nobody was. So Brevard Prevention Coalition is so much bigger than what people really think. And the fact that your team is coming up, like I said, with all these creative ideas of how to approach it and how to set the message and set the goal is just miraculous. It really is. And it adds to all of your professional, professionalism and outside of school, right? Because you had to come up with all this stuff,
yeah.
Inventive, artistic ways of doing it. So how do people get involved? You know, this is a great opportunity now for you to tell us about donations and what we can do to help you here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yeah, so on April 19th at Jolie Smith Center in Cocoa, we are actually going to have our first event for Do It For Pete, and it's called I Am My Sister's Keeper. So coming out to that will be great. We're also looking for volunteers if it's something that you would want to get in involved with. You can definitely go on BrevardPrevention .com.
Org.
.org. Sorry, .org.
It happens.
So I'll share it all, I promise.
Okay, great, let's say it again. BrevardPrevention.org, and you can sign up to be a volunteer on there. We also would love donations. Money donations will always help because we are trying to do a lot at the I Am My Sister's Keeper event. We were able to partner with four sororities local, the Deltas, the AKAs, the Zetas, and the SG Rose. So with that, we are going to we have enough food to feed 150 people. Chick-fil-A in Malabar was able to donate that to us. Yeah, Hair Biz, which is across the street from Jolie Community Center. They are a barbershop. They are going to donate 20 free haircuts to the first boys, our teens that come. And then also we're going to have a lot of games and giveaways. And also we're doing a mental health grant. It's the Do It For P mental health grant, and it's $1,500. And that is aimed towards mental health organizations that are dedicated to providing free therapy sessions or counseling sessions to people that cannot afford it. So we have a lot of things going on, and we're trying to do even more, even provide like three gift cards to individuals that may need assistance with groceries. So if you know you can donate money, gift cards, anything like that, we would love for you to support us. You can also go on our website and donate through the portal on there, through PayPal. And also, I just want to put this in, like, you know, I talked about my sister and things that she went through and how she did was poisoned. But the purpose of Do It For Pete and I Am My Sister's Keeper is to provide a environment for people to heal. My sister, she was my older sister, and she was a sister. I don't know if you have a sister or a sibling, someone that's older than you, and you know no matter what happened, you have that person that's going to have your back. And when her life was taken, I feel like my protection on earth was taken. I know I have God that protects me at all time and is getting me through this hard process, but I knew that she had my back. And when she left, it felt like I was exposed and I didn't have anyone that had my back. But taking my pain and turning it into passion, I want to give that sisterhood and that love that she gave me, that support. Even when she was in her darkest moments, she still supported me and wanted the best for me. And that's what I want to do with Do It For Pete and provide to everyone in the community or everyone that we come in contact with. And what I tell them is every time you take Narcan, every time you get the education, every time you spread the word, you're doing it for Pete.
So how do people get in touch with you for, I know 211 used to be an option for people to call, and I'm not sure if that's working as well as it used to, but nonetheless, how do people get in touch with you if they know that they need services or would like education, counseling?
They can go to our website, BrevardPrevention.org. They can call us at 321-426-1644. And that's, you know, really the best way to do it.
Okay.
On our website, the contact link's at the bottom. So just really proud of what we were able to do. And Terrell, I think fraternities too got to help, right?
Yes, we also have some fraternities that are going to, donate their time, and they donate it to the cause. We have the Qs, the Sigmas, and the Kappas. And we thank you guys for being a part of the mission as well.
And we will make sure we get this all on our social media channels as well as our website. Terrell and Stanley, thank you so much for coming and being part of the show today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you for the education and all the things that you do for our community. It means the world to certainly to us, but I know there's a lot of people out there that are singing your praises for what you've done for them and their families. Thanks again, folks, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are here each and every Monday, 1510 WWBC, 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We will talk to you next week.